Chapter 1. A Powerful Myth. In the United States today, most people, including medical doctors, believe that the tremendous reduction of infectious disease mortality in developed nations, such as the United States, during the 20th century, is attributable to vaccines. This belief was affirmed and memorialized in briefs submitted to the U.S. Supreme Court by the American Academy of Pediatrics and other public health organizations in the 2010 case, Bruswitz v. Wyeth, LLC. The petitioner, Russell and Robalee Bruswitz, claimed that their daughter, Hannah, had been disabled by a diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, DTP, vaccine manufactured by Letterly Laboratories, owned by respondent Wyeth. Wyeth claimed that, pursuant to the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, it could not be held liable for injury or death caused by its vaccine. In their brief amici curiae, Latin for friends of the court, the American Academy of Pediatrics asserted that because vaccines had proven to be so instrumental in the dramatic reduction of infectious disease mortality, it was imperative for companies like Wyeth to continue manufacturing and distributing them. Because lawsuits such as that filed by the petitioner, Bruswitz, could imperil this essential service to the nation, it was equally imperative that their liability protection, granted by the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, be affirmed by the Supreme Court. The brief asserted that vaccination with just 7 of the routinely recommended childhood vaccines prevents an estimated 33,000 deaths and 14 million cases of disease in every birth cohort. If the phrase "every birth cohort" is taken to mean all children born within a given calendar year, this assertion means that, without the 7 recommended vaccines, about 33,000 of the children born each year would die of the associated infectious diseases before reaching adulthood. Belief in such claims is now so firmly held that it may be characterized as an article of faith. However, according to official U.S. vital statistics, mortality from each disease on the immunization schedule, except polio, had already plummeted before the associated vaccine was introduced. In the year 1946, 2 years before the era of mass vaccination began with the combined diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, DPT, vaccine, a total of 1,259 Americans died of diphtheria, 1,241 died of pertussis, and 585 died of tetanus, for a total of 3,085 deaths. These were small fractions of the number of deaths attributed to these diseases at the turn of the 20th century. In 1952, 3 years before the polio vaccine was introduced, the U.S. experienced the worst polio outbreak in history, with 3,145 deaths attributed to the disease. 10 times more Americans died, 36,088, in car accidents in that year. In 1962, 1 year before the measles vaccine was introduced, and over 5 years before the mumps and rubella vaccines were introduced, 408 Americans died of measles, 43 died of mumps, and 8 died of rubella. On January 22, 2025, Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, ranking member of the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pension, HELP, led a roundtable discussion about the importance of vaccines in America and their impact on public health. The overarching theme was that vaccines were responsible for the drastic reduction of childhood mortality in the United States during the 20th century. A mere glance at vital statistics rates in the United States, compiled by the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, now called Health and Human Services, reveals that this isn't true. Charts published by this federal agency illustrate a steep and steady decline of death rates for all infectious diseases, except polio, between 1900 and 1948. A 2016 Penn Wharton, University of Pennsylvania, study estimated that the death rate from infectious disease fell by 90% from 1900 to 1950. Infant mortality data taken from official death registers in Great Britain and the United States tells the same story of rapidly declining infectious disease mortality before the era of mass vaccination. Prior to 1900, when a national death registration system was created in the United States, the most accurate death records were compiled in Britain, which instituted a civil death registry in 1837. Additionally, the large London parish of St. Martin in the Fields produced detailed death records between 1752 and 1812. From these British records may be gleaned the following trend in child mortality under 5 years old. 1750, 350 to 400 deaths per 1,000 live births. 1800, 329 deaths per live 1,000 births. 1900, 228 deaths per live 1,000 births. The U.S. government did not establish procedures for compiling nationwide vital statistics until 1915, and it wasn't until 1933 that all states were reporting. Child mortality in the U.S. at the turn of the 20th century is therefore a matter of estimation, with significant variation between different published estimates. 1900, 165 to 238 deaths per 1,000 live births. 1945, 46 deaths per 1,000 live births. 2000, 8 deaths per 1,000 live births. The further reduction in childhood mortality between 1945 and 2000 is largely attributable to the use of antibiotics to treat childhood pneumonia, other improvements in neonatal care, and greater access to medical care for poor children. A CDC investigation found that during this period, the number of children who died from pneumonia declined by 97% from 24,637 in 1939 to 800 in 1996. Safety technologies such as child car seats also reduced child mortality during the latter half of the 20th century. During the 19th and early 20th centuries, the top killers of children were tuberculosis, diarrhea of infancy, bacillary dysentery, typhoid fever, scarlet fever, diphtheria, and lobar pneumonia. As Professor Stanford T. Shulman, Division of Infectious Diseases, Northwestern University, noted in his paper, The History of Pediatric Infectious Diseases, inadequate sanitation, impure water, and unsafe milk supplies all contributed very significantly to the spread of infectious diseases among infants and children, and particularly to those living in the very crowded circumstances that promote transmission. Milk-borne diseases, including human and bovine tuberculosis, brucellosis, salmonellosis, streptococcal infections, diphtheria, and summer diarrhea, were particularly deadly for children. Tuberculosis, which is estimated to have killed 1 in 7 people at its height, was the leading cause of death during this period. Acute respiratory infections, noted in the death registry as bronchitis and pneumonia, were the second leading cause of death. These were followed by waterborne diseases such as cholera and typhoid fever. Between 1870 and 1930, Britain and the United States made tremendous improvements in the following arenas. 1. Nutrition. Significant increases in food availability and nutrient content greatly improved public health and disease resistance. Vitamin D fortification of milk in the 1930s further strengthened children's immune health. The severity of malnutrition in the past, catastrophic for immune health, is evidenced by the fact that scurvy and rickets were still common among the poor until the 20th century. 2. Public sanitation. With modern sewer systems installed to channel effluent away from cities and their drinking water, largely eradicated cholera and typhoid fever by the year 1900. Public sanitation campaigns in the U.S. against breeding mosquito grounds largely eliminated yellow fever by the year 1906. In the American South, an aggressive public sanitation campaign to build outhouses largely eradicated hookworm by the year 1955. 3. Secure water supply and treatment, filtration and chlorination, infrastructure. 4. Pasteurization, refrigeration, and other hygienic measures for producing, transporting, and storing milk and other food products. 5. Improved housing, better heating, ventilation, and plumbing for the urban working poor. Water closets, soap, warm water, and detergent for washing bed linens and clothing became standard household amenities. 6. Labor laws reduced hazardous and stressful working conditions, including excessively long hours. 7. Introduction of sulfa antibiotics in the 1930s, penicillin in 1943, and erythromycin in 1952, reduced mortality from bacterial infections, including diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. In his 1988 book, The Origins of Human Disease, the British physician, epidemiologist, and medical historian, Thomas McCune, made a persuasive case that of all factors, nutritional improvements made the single greatest contribution to the reduction of infectious disease mortality. A well-nourished body with no vitamin deficiencies is very hardy, but it becomes highly susceptible when it is malnourished. In our era of calorie abundance, it is easy to forget that even in Europe and North America, famine and vital nutrient deficiencies were a common feature of the human condition until well into the 20th century. Another factor that probably contributed to the sharp decline of infectious disease mortality in developed nations was natural selection. Between roughly 1600 and 1950, the populations of Europe and North America became steadily more urbanized. That is, an increasingly large proportion of the population resided in close quarters in cities, drawing on the same sources of water and food. During this same period, international exploration and trade exposed these populations to successive waves of infectious disease pathogens that resulted in high childhood mortality. It is therefore likely that during this 350-year period, strong selective pressure was exerted on the peoples of these nations that resulted in higher disease resistance. Simply put, successive generations of children who possessed greater disease resistance survived childhood illnesses and passed on their genes to their offspring. As a result of these developments, the case fatality rate of childhood diseases precipitously declined before vaccines were introduced. For example, the case fatality rate of measles in 1911 to 1912 was 21 deaths per 1,000 reported cases. By 1953 to 1962, the decade before the first measles vaccine was licensed, the case fatality rate had already declined to less than one death per 1,000 cases. Already in 1910, heart disease became the leading cause of death in the U.S. and has remained so ever since. Around 1933, cancer supplanted pneumonia, tuberculosis, and influenza to become the second leading cause of death. In 1900, life expectancy at birth was 46 for American men and 48 for American women. In 1955, life expectancy at birth was 67 for men and 72 for women. Life expectancy for men was substantially lowered by World War II and the Korean War and rose little until the end of the Vietnam War in 1975. In the year 1953, isoniazid, an antibiotic for treating tuberculosis, was introduced and further reduced tuberculosis mortality by almost 50% in the decade that followed. Over the course of the 20th century, the incidence of accidental deaths was reduced by 53%. The prevalence of fatal coronary heart disease also began to decline in the late 60s. These favorable developments and the cessation of war further increased American life expectancy between 1955 and 2000. Compared to advances in nutrition, public sanitation, food safety, and improved housing, vaccines made a marginal contribution to eliminating infectious disease mortality. During the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, accidents and war presented a far greater hazard to young, well-nourished Americans than infectious diseases. Thus, at best, vaccines finished off what was left of disease burdens that had already been drastically reduced by other improvements. The notion that vaccines were the primary cause of the tremendous reduction of infectious disease mortality in developed nations is a myth. How did this myth come about and become so powerful? Why did vaccines become a sacred cow instead of subjects of critical evaluation and discussion? To answer these questions, we must examine the genesis of mankind's love affair with vaccines in an 18th century smallpox inoculation procedure known as variolation.